Hello, my loves, and welcome to the Hungry for Healing podcast. My name is Emily, your host and newfound cheerleader when it comes to you healing your relationship to food once and for all. I know a thing or two about diet culture, insecurities around body weight, body image, disorderly eating, and overall just having a very poor relationship between yourself, your body, and your plate. I personally recovered from a 10-year eating disorder and started this podcast as a platform to share my own personal experience as well as the experience and science of others around their take on this food battle the world seems to be under. I hope you stick around if you're hungry to heal because you have an entire life to gain and a food struggle to lose as we venture on this journey together. Now let's get started. Hello, my beautiful friends. Welcome back to the podcast today. I'm going to be very honest. I feel like it's a ranty type day, so bear with me. I definitely felt called to record this podcast today. I really didn't have a plan to sit down at the mic, but then, you know, something came on my heart and I wanted to share it with all of you. And I'm just so thankful to have you here, to be listening to the Hungry for Healing podcast. I know what it's like to be very hungry for healing. And with that, I think I can dive right into today's topic, which is really about how perfectionism has kept me from so many things in my life. I know I've talked about perfectionism before on my podcast, but I specifically want to really share something that's come sort of alight in my life recently, something that has really been surfacing a lot in terms of not only my recovery, but my career, friendships, the expectations I put on myself when it comes to my life. And that is being really scared of saying what I want, being really, really scared of change, being really scared of admitting to myself, almost more than anyone else, what I desire, what I want in my life, what I feel needs to change, and having that fear of change so deeply rooted in me as a perfectionist because I can't control change. This is something recently that I've really been struggling with in my recovery. I think I used to struggle with it. I think it's now sort of trickled into my real life. So going back a couple years, when I started my own eating disorder recovery, for those who don't know, I can give a quick synopsis. I struggled specifically with anorexia. I was clinically diagnosed with it at the age of 12, all the way until I was about 19, 20. Around the age of 20, I was in college and I kind of shifted my behaviors around my eating disorder and started to develop more of a binge restrict sort of eating disorder, which came with purging episodes, restrictive episodes, binging episodes. And so I definitely feel called to share what I went through and what so many other people go through sort of behind the scenes, that my eating disorder wasn't just one way. It wasn't just one specific, you know, food group maybe that I was scared of. It wasn't a specific way that I ate every single day. It really did sort of just take over my entire life. And I struggled with food in every single aspect. I would, you know, crash diet. I would work out every single day. And then I would binge eat in secrecy over and over and over again. So if you're someone who feels maybe a little confused or scared where you are right now, that maybe you deal with food in different ways at different times, I think it's very normal. And that's what I found myself really dealing with in college and all the way up until about 2 years ago when I personally started my own recovery journey and started really sharing it with you guys about a year ago. So I've come a very long way. I do say that I am recovered. However, I believe my definition of recovered could be different from others. I think for me, being recovered is just not being perfect, which plays into this episode. I still have bad days with food. I still have worse body image days than maybe I wish I did. I still have certain fears sometimes around certain foods or around how I'm looking or how I'm eating, but I'm very aware of them. And I can take the opposite actions against them, and I can express how they're making me feel to someone that I trust. I'm just much more awake, I guess you could say, to my eating disorder. And so for me, that is recovered. I think I will always have a certain weird, I guess is the only word I can say, relationship with food and with my body. I've had it for so long. However, I can say that every single day that I've moved forward over these last 2 years, my relationship with food and my body has only gotten better. It's a slow, slow process, but it's worth it. I can tell you, sitting here right now recording this podcast on my bedroom floor, that the biggest thing that you have to do is let go of being scared of change. Let go of being scared that you could fail. You could fail. And I wish I could tell myself this years ago when I struggled with food for so long. And I would say about in the middle of my high school, in the middle of those years, I really wanted to recover. And that was so long. The timeline, there's such a gap between when I wanted to recover and when I actually did it. I think anyone who struggles with an eating disorder wants to not. So I want to make that clear. I want to call attention to that. I don't think if you're scared of recovery, you don't want to get better. I think it's really hard. I think it's really hard to admit that you're maybe not doing well. I think it's really scary to admit that to get better, quote unquote, you have to let go of everything that feels safe to you right now. To heal from your eating disorder, you have to let go of everything that you feel is keeping you safe. Everything that feels normal, everything that has somewhat become a habit or a routine or a coping mechanism. And letting go of coping mechanisms, if you know anything about psychology, is probably one of the hardest things that humans do. Because when we're scared of change or when we're scared of certain situations or emotions, we go to what feels safe. And unfortunately, sometimes what feels safe to some of us, I can speak for myself, isn't safe for us. My eating disorder always played this trick with me. It played this trick where I felt like if I kept doing the things it told me to do, I would eventually feel better, right? And our eating disorder behaviors are always triggered by some form of anxiety, some form of depression, some form of insecurity, loneliness, boredom. Insecurity, maybe something very specific, maybe it's something very broad and vague to even ourselves. But that initial trigger makes us feel scared. We feel vulnerable. I always felt very vulnerable in certain situations. I didn't like, for example, feeling really tired. That was one of my triggers. I kind of promoted myself as this super extroverted, always positive, always happy person. And if I ever felt tired or if I felt in a bad mood, it made me feel really scared. It made me feel like I could be attacked. Someone could say something about me. I could not please that one person. And so our eating disorders always come about from these triggers. And what our disorders do is they tell us that, well, if we do X, Y, and Z, whatever behaviors you're struggling with or have struggled with in the past, if you do that behavior, well, then the pain will go away. What we don't realize at the time, or maybe it's too difficult to let go of the fairy tale story, is that the original trigger never goes away, right? Our pain never goes away. Our eating disorder just distracts us from it. It distracts us from having to face our fear. It distracts us from having to face our trigger. And when we do this distraction over and over and over again, it gets much harder to ever face that fear or that insecurity, stress, whatever it is that's coming to the surface. And I know this firsthand. I know what it feels like to hate your eating disorder at the same time as you kind of love it. And I know how many people are scared to say that they loved part of their eating disorders. And am I promoting them? Absolutely not. But am I calling attention to something that I personally dealt with and that so many people don't understand about any form of addiction? I personally, and if people disagree with me, I completely open room to have other opinions, disagreements, discussions on it. I truly believe that my eating disorder was an addiction. It was an addiction for me to run. It was an addiction for me to distract, to disassociate. I was addicted to always running away from the things that scared me the most. And as a kid, you can't blame us, and I could never blame you for listening. The world is really scary, and being a perfectionist, being a type A person in a chaotic environment sit and really think about that. I'd never thought about it until I wanted to really record this podcast today. Like, I'm a type A, you know, perfectionistic, organizational queen, one might say, and I live in a chaotic world filled with people who I can't control. And on top of all of this, I'm a serial people pleaser. I care way too deeply about what other people think about me, how other people are feeling, what other people feel towards me, and the whole cycle goes on. And I can't control that either. I can't control if the guy that I like will like me back. I can't control if my parents will finally give me the approval and the attention that maybe you've been so desperately looking for. I can't control if someone will say something mean to me. And I can't control if I will be perfect enough. And whenever I felt like I couldn't control it, whenever I felt kind of my facade or my mask, you know, slipping away, I had to run because I was so scared to just show my authentic self to the world. I was so scared that if I just was Emily, was that ever going to be good enough? Were people actually going to like me for who I was? Like, I had the most deep-rooted insecurities, and I still have some of them today, around, well, what if I'm not the loudest and the funniest and the smartest and the most caring and empathetic person I can possibly be to every person I come into contact? Well, then I'm not good enough. And deep down, every eating disorder is rooted in not feeling good enough. It's just identifying where, who, and in what form. I never felt good enough, and I had to continuously run away from exhaustion. When we struggle with eating disorders, we know what it feels like to live in secrecy. We know what it feels like to put up a facade every single day. We know what it feels like to constantly be racking our brains about every checklist, every to-do, every person, every place, every moment that we could possibly either be perfect or totally mess up. And looking back at the course of my life, my whole problem with food really came down to feeling like if I had one slip up, if I had one day where I just felt sad, if I had one day where I might have looked a little bit heavier in a photo, if I had one day where I didn't show up to that meeting on time and get an A on my test and was the star athlete of whatever and finally got my, you know, dad to smile at me, whatever your story may be, if I didn't get all of it, then I was nothing. And as soon as I felt like I was nothing, I had to run. And so I think my story has taken a little bit of a turn, but I'm sort of just letting myself ramble about what's on my heart and what I feel like you might need to hear. I was so exhausted with pretending. Something that I've recently realized about myself, letting go of all this perfection, letting go of the fear of change, letting go of not feeling worthy enough to just show my authentic self. Something I realized very recently, and this was what happened today that really prompted this podcast. I wasn't sure what direction it would go in, but here we are. I had a really stressful day at work today. And I, if you don't know, I work as an assistant at a recruiting firm here in Boston. I absolutely adore my company. I love my job. And I had a really tough day. I was just really overwhelmed. I felt really stressed out. And my boyfriend actually left me at home alone. He took the dog out to see his family. My boyfriend lives about 45 minutes from where we are, and he's just about to start a new job, so he's not working. So he went home to spend the day with his niece and nephew, and he took Benji, our little corgi, and there I was, alone in my apartment, which is one of my major triggers, feeling stressed and overwhelmed, another major trigger of mine, feeling not good enough because I had had a meeting that day where my boss had pretty much given me some feedback on some email that I sent to someone. And even though it was very productive feedback, it was very positive. He was just telling me a few things that I could change to make it better. I don't do well with criticism. And it's something that I really want to work on. Because for so long, and a little bit still, I'll admit, I take criticism as not being good enough, I take criticism as not being perfect. And emails kept flooding in, meetings kept flooding in, and I felt super overwhelmed and I felt really sad. And I was trying to make sense of, you know, why do I feel sad? Oh, I think it's because I feel overwhelmed. Oh, I think it's because my period's coming soon. Oh, I think it's because my boss, you know, had this note on my email or whatever it may be. And I just started to cry. And that for me was such a win. It sounds like a super negative, weird, kind of twisted win. It was such a win. Because 5 years ago, Emily would have immediately shut down. She would have canceled all of her plans for the day. She would have reached out to her boss and said, I can't do this. I would have made up some excuse like, oh, something's happening with my family, or oh, something is happening in my apartment. I, you know, I can't work this afternoon. And I would have either restricted the rest of the day or I would have binged the rest of the day away. Because I just was so hard on myself. I just would never allow myself to, I guess, quote unquote, like put my guard down. I never allowed myself to just feel how I was feeling, never allowed myself to admit what was going on in my head, admit that maybe I wasn't doing very well, admit that maybe something hurt my feelings, right? So after my little cry, I actually had another meeting with my boss and I just explained that I was feeling very overwhelmed. I had a lot of work piled on me from different people, which I think most of them didn't know that I had other work coming from other people, right? So it ended up just being a huge miscommunication. My boss handled it so well. He moved a couple of the deadlines for projects we were working on out a few days. He helped take one project off my hands, all because I allowed myself to cry. All because I truly allowed myself to cry and to speak up and to admit that I couldn't handle it all, that I felt super stressed out, that I needed some help, and that today was just a bad day and I didn't have to change my food because of it, change my body because of it, change my life because of it. Because here's the other side of what I used to do. Here's the other side of being really scared of being vulnerable, of being yourself. Here's the other side of being a perfectionist. Is every time I deemed that I quote unquote messed up, and anything that I'm saying today, these like, I guess trigger words or definition words can be completely different for you. Your story is different from anyone else's. And it's really helpful to write down what are your actual triggers, what are your actual behaviors, what are your actual quote unquote failures. Because for me, like I said, 5 years ago, crying and asking for help and admitting that I was overwhelmed was a failure, a huge failure. And so old me would have said, oh, you failed. So you not only have to do the behavior to distract yourself from feeling so bad about yourself that you failed, you also then the next day have to completely reinvent yourself, right? New Emily, 2021 Emily, everything's going to be perfect again. We're never going to have an episode like that. How dare you have that sort of embarrassing episode of crying or needing support from your boss? Like, we will never do that again. Here we go. Perfection. Sound familiar? I used to wake up the day after I would have a failure, right? And my failures could be large, small. They were all related to me, right? They were failures that I had deemed as failures that weren't perfect, Emily. I would wake up the next day and I would start a new diet. I would work out really hard. I would have a perfect morning routine. I would clean my room. I would set goals for myself. I would start tracking my calories again, trying to get back to the place that I felt I had to sit at, otherwise I was nothing. This conversation has changed a little bit from me wanting to talk about the fear of change into the all or nothing mentality that so many of us hold deep within ourselves, and I'm going to keep going with it because I guess it's what needs to be said. All or nothing mentality will only ever leave you with nothing. I'm going to say that again for you guys. All or nothing mentality will only ever leave you feeling like nothing. Because you will never live up to the perfectionistic standards that you've placed on yourself. And the real trick of this is you don't have to. I had the most crazy expectations on myself when it came to what was a failure and what was a perfect Emily. I would tell myself that crying was a failure. I would tell myself that not being a part of some organization on campus was a failure. I would tell myself that eating too many grams of salt was a failure. Anything that I had deemed as a failure was actually just normal life. Just normal life. If I canceled plans on a friend, if I got an A minus on an exam, if I messed up maybe at like work one day, I was a failure. Because I had such a delicate ego back then, and this is something I'm still working on now. My ego was completely in the hands of anyone else in the entire earth, in the entire atmosphere, other than mine. I took everything that anyone said or did or acted towards me, or that I made up in my head that someone did, thought, said, or acted towards me as me. I took any grade, any number, any percentage to mean something about my self-worth. Meaning that if I got an A minus on exam, it wasn't an A minus on my exam, it was an A minus on me, and that wasn't good enough. And as soon as I've had that trigger of not feeling good enough, which is the number one trigger that every single one of us deals with at the core of our eating disorder, it would trigger me to feel like, oh, well, I'm not good enough because of this, which means I need to fix my food, and by fixing my food, I will fix myself. Once again, sound familiar? I believed that thin people were perfect, that skinny models never failed, that thin individuals no one ever disliked, no one ever picked last, no one ever asked out on it, like no one ever didn't ask them out on a date, right? I had this like godly ideal on thinness. And I'm very ashamed and sad to admit it. I thought that the more thin I was, the better I was, the more value I could carry. And how do you get thin? You diet. And if you deem being thin as being perfect, the ultimate level of perfection, what are you going to do every single time that you feel like you failed in some area of your life? You have to get comfortable with change. I guess I will loop it back to change. You have to get comfortable with change. You have to get comfortable with sitting with yourself. You have to get comfortable with being alone. You have to get really, really comfortable with your triggers. And you have to place new coping mechanisms in the place of your old eating disorder behaviors. Otherwise, recovery will never work. Recovery is so much deeper than just food. So much deeper than food. I would argue it's also so much deeper than weight. It is a fundamental block in your mind of what you believe you have to be to matter. And until you start to release that facade part that we carry as perfectionists, as soon as you start to release the control that you so desperately have been holding on to for probably your whole life, if you're like me, as soon as you start to release that you cannot control other people and you cannot control change. I wanted every single day to be the same, every single person to think the same about me, and I wanted to succeed at the exact same level on absolutely everything I did. And if anything seemed like a change to me, if someone maybe didn't smile at me in the hallway, if someone didn't like whatever I presented in class, if someone had a constructive criticism to give to me, that was change. And I couldn't control that, even though I tried so hard to control everything in my life that I could, especially my food and my weight. It's a huge, ugly cycle, if you can see. It's a massive, ugly circle that diet culture has painted for us, telling us that, well, if you're thin, you'll have no problems. How do you get thin? You diet. How do you diet well? You diet perfectly. And the more perfect you can diet, the more thin you get, and therefore, the less problems you will have. It's a lie, my friends. It's a dark, dark lie. Because when I was in inpatient care, when I had gotten very thin, when I was under the supervision of doctors because they were concerned about my health, I still had all the problems. Life is problems. If we didn't have any problems in life, we would be so bored. Trust me. If we didn't have change, we would be so bored. If we didn't have stress and insecurity and sadness and tears and joy and love, we wouldn't really be human. I had to start to release the belief that I could control the negative and enjoy all the positive. Because by so desperately trying to run away and distract myself and disassociate from the negative, I ended up only ever having negative. I never felt happy in my eating disorder, when in reality, happiness was what I thought I was chasing. I never felt free or confident or popular or beautiful in my eating disorder. I only felt the negatives that I refused to accept were there. Now, as I slowly accept the negatives of my life, as I slowly embrace that I'm human and I'm never going to be perfect and I will never live up to the standards that I've placed so heavily on my own shoulders, the more I start to really let go, the happier I am. The more that I stop saying, I will be happy once, I will finally feel happy when, I will feel good enough if I'm like super happy here and now. I want to find a quote on my phone by Denzel Washington, so bear with me as I pull it up, but it's one of the most beautiful quotes I've ever heard in my whole life, and I think that this will really wrap up the message that I'm trying to get across, and that's, beware of destination addiction. The idea that happiness is in the next place, the next job, or even with the next partner. Until you give up the idea that happiness is somewhere else, it will never be where you are. Whenever I would feel my triggers and I would feel sad and overwhelmed, anxious, scared, lonely, had I just sat there with myself, those would have passed and I would have then felt happy. The more I tried to run and distract and pretend like that had never happened, that I never felt anxious, never felt upset, never felt lonely, the more it became my unwavering, consistent reality. I love you all so, so much, and you are strong enough to face change. You are capable enough to call out your triggers. And you are loved enough by me and so many people in your life to heal from this eating disorder. I'll talk to you all real soon.